Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Good evening. Welcome to True Crime Broads. This is Crystal.
And Renee.
And thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate you. So, hey, Renee, what have you been up to?
Hey. Oh, my gosh. I've been so busy today. It's felt more like a Friday than a Monday. But, you know, I guess that's just a par for the
course. Yeah. It really has. I agree.
Yeah, it's been one thing after another, you know, nonstop. So it's kind of nice to take this break and, you know, sit down and talk about the case and, you know, some things that we've come across and, you know, just, I guess, just visit with you.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. I know you were busy today and I'm happy that we're finally connecting and getting on the air and talking about this. You know, Renee, I don't know about you, but I watched the HLN show again, and for our listeners that aren't aware, Headline News, otherwise known mostly as HLN these days, they had a wonderful documentary. It was actually part of a series, and it's dedicated to the Missy Beavers case, and it's an hour-long program, and the name of the series is, it's a new series that started last summer. I believe the Missy Beavers one came on in late June. But it's called Crime, Lies, and Videos. And that's the name of the series. And Missy's episode is episode 4. And it's called Murder in the Church. You can still see it. As we discovered today, Renee, we can stream it through our cable provider. We have Spectrum, coincidentally, Renee and I both. But I also heard that you can get it on DirecTV. And if you have any way to get HLN, which stands for Headline News, on demand, apparently that means you can get the show. So I just wanted to share that information because I've been wanting to watch this again for a long time and I just didn't know how to do it. So now
I'm
we do.
So glad that you figured that out because we've been trying to figure this out. I thought, I can't believe that they put this on here and then it's just over. You can't watch it again. I'm so upset about it, you know, because you always want to go back and recap and watch it again. And of course, we know people, you know, all over are always saying, you know, oh my gosh, where can I watch that at? We didn't have a clue, you know?
So well, like, you know what? I don't think, right, I agree. And I don't think it's always been there though, because I searched around for it a while back, but this time, when I got on my Roku main screen and I got on the main menu, I mean, and I searched lies, crime, and bam, it came up. And I've done that in the past and it didn't. So I don't know if this is newly released or what, but I'm so happy it's there because I watched it like three times tonight.
Yeah, maybe it's because they finished all the seasons. Or not all the episodes. I'm sorry, not the seasons.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's possible.
Maybe they point all of the episodes, so that's why they put it out. I mean, I know that sometimes you find stuff that that comes out and it'll say, you know, season one, it'll say episode one and two only or something, but who knows? But anyway,
I don't know, but
I'm glad you figured that out.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad it's there because we haven't seen it since the summer. So that's
right,
was really nice.
Right. I didn't get to watch the entire thing, but I did get to watch some of it, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Right, right. Well, you know, it had a lot of the people that we've been aware of in the past. You know, Renee Jones makes an appearance, and she's speaking out not only as a personal friend of the Beavers, especially Missy, but she was also in charge of apparently all of the Camp Gladiator classes. You know, she was sort of a higher up, I guess you would say. Right. And, you know, she was interesting. She said that Missy's class was generally 12 to 15 people. Mm-hmm. That it was absolutely routine for all of the Camp Gladiator classes to be public knowledge and be posted on various social media platforms. So it really wasn't unusual. You know, I think it's been tempting. A lot of people have said, you know, why did Missy post all that? But apparently all the camp, it's just sort of a thing they do because they obviously want people to show up and know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got to have that posted somewhere for people to see. So that wasn't a mystery, and it wasn't. I mean, a lot of people were like, "Well, that's the issue." Well, it would be the same situation even if we weren't in, you know, social media. I mean, people would have it on bulletin board, or they would have it, you know, posted right somewhere for everybody to see, so that they knew. I mean, even if it was an ad in the paper, I mean, it would have been somewhere. Hey, this is where we're going to have this class every week. So, I mean, you know, it's just unfortunate, but yeah, I agree. It's got to be published somewhere for people to know. And it still is.
Right.
I mean, they still have classes everywhere. So you just have
right,
to be
exactly
proactive and be safe. And unfortunately, she carried a gun, but.
Oh, and something else Renee Jones said is that the classes are consistent. So you really almost don't even have to keep up with it. I mean, they have them at the same place, same time, almost all the time. You know, with rarely, you know, every now and then they'll switch it to another location for some mm-hmm reason, but you know, this, and they had also, she had also posted, which I know you had a point to make, on this, but she had posted the night before, the thing that was different about the morning that she was murdered was inclement weather was coming and everybody knew it was going to be bad weather. And
right,
so she went ahead and addressed that the night before she went to bed. And we have this screenshot is up on our Instagram page right now. If you want to tune into True Crime Broad's Instagram page, should be pretty easy to find.
Right.
And it's maybe what, the third picture on there. And it says, it has that very post that Missy made the night before where she says, if it's raining, we're still training.
Do you remember if the one that we posted? Cause I don't remember. Did it have the wording that she put on her post, or was it just a picture of that? If it's raining, we're still training.
I think it's the whole thing, but I'm pulling it up
okay
right now.
Okay.
Yes, it says 5 a.m. Creekside Church of Christ, comma, we have cover under the front awning, exclamation
yes
point.
Okay, good. Okay, I wanted to make sure. I couldn't remember when I put that on there if I had the right one, you know, because some of them just have the picture of the thing. But okay, good. Yeah, and that was something that I found interesting. There's a lot of people that are always speculating, of course, because we don't know, but saying, you know, I think the problem is that it was raining, so they were having the class inside the church, so that was the problem. But actually, they weren't having the class inside the church. They were having it under the awning where she pulled up at the church where she parked. I guess she would just unload everything. And I'm sure that she would go inside the church and maybe unlock everything and turn on some lights so that people could go inside if they need to use the bathroom or get a drink of water. I mean, that's what I'm assuming. But right, they actually had the class under the awning. And so that was even something that they reported that was not correct, even in the show. And I guess people just don't, you know, pay enough attention to what information there is out there to verify it. And I feel like it's important because in the segment that you're talking about, the I think it was Stephen Fabian, which I really like him and his reporting. I liked him in that show. But it said being moved, that the class was being moved inside. And that's not correct. It was actually going to be under the awning like she posted on, you know, on her Facebook page. And I found that important because of a couple of reasons. This person that killed her, they had to have that information to know that she would go inside the church, because if you were looking at her Facebook page, you would see that it was going to be under the awning. So you might not know if she's going to go in. You know what I'm saying? So you might be like, well, you know, they might have had to have waited for her behind the bushes or somewhere close to where she was going to park. But this person has specific information knowing that she was going to unlock the church, go inside for whatever reason, whether it's to have people, you know, access to the bathrooms. I mean, I just found that interesting. And I think that's kind of important.
Right. I agree with you totally. Cause you know, if they were just going to do the whole thing outside and she, and how, you know, the perp might have, she unlocks the actually has keys to the church, because I know there is, it's not Camp Gladiator, I think it's Texas Fit Chicks that works out in the Kroger at the intersection by my house mm-hmm in the parking lot.
Uh-huh.
But they're so far away from Kroger, I mean super far, like it would be a long walk to go to Kroger. They're in front of a bank actually that's not even open yet. I mean, it's still dark when they're doing this.
Right.
I used to see them when I was taking my daughter to drill team practice in the mornings before school. And they're out there, but they're not even close to a building that's open. So I know those ladies are staying out in the parking lot. Ladies and gentlemen, sorry, but I think that they're out the parking lot working out. I don't think they're going in anywhere to use the bathroom or anything. So that's a totally different situation than what you're describing, is Missy having access. She actually had a key to the church and went in there, and it was her routine. So yeah, it's possible that the perpetrator was aware of that and therefore knew he needed to break in there, or he or she needed to break in to wait for her in there.
Right.
And you know, otherwise, why not wait in your car?
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Or just around the bushes, around the back of the building or something close to, you know, that side of the church. But, you know, another reason could be because it was early. Obviously, this class was always early. And I think this class at 5 a.m. was always Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I think the Tuesday and Thursdays were the later classes, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And they had several different times, but I wonder if she was turning on the lights because, you know, they obviously, it was early and it was dark because it was, you know, rainy, cloudy. So they might've been also to turn on some lights.
Right. And it is before sunrise anyway, even if it weren't cloudy that day. So you've got a good point there. Another thing I think you might remember we found doing some more digging. This has been a couple of years ago, but I think I remember emailing this to you and Tim back when we were doing our really intense digging every day. And I found on Facebook some older posts where they did actually move the workout inside the church, but it was inclement weather that was freezing. Like it was January.
Oh, yeah. It was too much.
So that's more than just needing to shield yourself from rain, but it's still warm. That was like, it's too cold to work out in.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
There were instances where they moved it in completely indoors, but this apparently wasn't one of those times because she made it clear on there, we have cover under the awning. Now, I would imagine if the storm got really bad and there was some sideways rain, that they would take it inside. But
right,
like you said, like you pointed out, that wasn't the plan this time. They were going to stay outside under the awning. And we did see pictures of them on, I think it wasn't long before this, the day of the murder, that we did see pictures of them working out outside, but the concrete looked wet.
Yes.
And they had been under the awning. So,
right.
You know, they definitely, these people are dedicated and they didn't let weather stand in their way most of the time. These people were out there doing it, even with the wet concrete or the freezing cold, they would just go inside, you know?
Yeah.
So very impressive. These people are dedicated for sure.
Absolutely.
Especially the trainers like Missy.
Absolutely. So you were talking about, you got to watch the whole thing, right?
Yes, I watched it a couple of times.
Okay,
tonight.
Good. Okay, good. So you'll know a little bit more because it's been a while since I've seen it all and I couldn't seem to get the whole thing to work. But anyway, but go ahead and tell me some interesting parts of it.
Well, you know, you had mentioned Stephen Fabian, and I agree with you. He does a great job. You know, I was kind of surprised to see he was a correspondent for Inside Edition, because that's kind of more of a gossip show than like a true crime. No, I just thought that was interesting. I knew I recognized him from somewhere, but I didn't know where. So anyway, Stephen Fabian made a really good point. He said he believes there's more video, but he doesn't understand why haven't they released it.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can think of, and then it's kind of funny because they edited in the podiatrist who I was going to introduce also, Dr. Michael Nirenberg. He is the forensic podiatrist. We've discussed him on previous podcasts and he played a role. He's mentioned in the December 26th search warrant, which we'll discuss in a very soon future podcast. But Dr. Nirenberg is a podiatrist who has worked in the criminal field, helping identify perpetrators through their gait, which is the way they walk. And it can be hindered by just the way someone's made, or it can be, you know, that you have some kind of an abnormality that you're born with, or an injury at the time that may not be permanent. Just he's familiar with all the factors that will affect the way someone moves. And it can be a hip injury, it can be an ankle or foot injury, or, you know, really anything. And he seemed, listening to him talk and also reading articles about him, he seems to, you would think that a forensic podiatrist, you know, whose background is being a podiatrist, which is a foot doctor, you would think that he would just zero in on the foot itself. But no, when he's studying gait, and he was talking about the things he took into account for the Missy Beavers case, when he was looking at each person of interest, he was analyzing everything, the position of their shoulders, the way they swing their arms, their hip placement. He was looking at all that. It's really fascinating, sort of a science, maybe a science meets art kind of thing. I'm not really sure, but I'm sure it's a science, but I didn't mean to insult forensic podiatry, but it's just such a new phenomenon as far as I'm concerned. I wasn't even aware of it until this case, that there was such a thing as a forensic podiatrist.
I didn't either. I really didn't.
Yeah, but Dr. Nuremberg, I don't know about you, but he struck me as just a really nice person. You know that part, speaking of parts of the video that wasn't released, I thought that was so fascinating and heartbreaking at the same time when he talked about, he said Midlothian Police Department sent me portions of the video that has not been released to the public. So that right there ended all the debate. You know, there's been debate among all of us for years. Is there more video? Well, he ended that debate right there. He said they sent me video that has not been released to the public. And he said, I see Missy walking in, and then you can tell that she hears something. And he said, knowing what, of course, we know what happens next, he said, I just catch myself wanting to say, run, leave. You know, it's just incredibly sad.
Yeah, that has got to be really hard to watch.
Yeah. And I think we mentioned this in another podcast, but I'm interested to know, did Missy hear footsteps, or did this perpetrator call out to her?
Yeah.
You know, we don't know what it was she heard, but apparently she snapped her head in that direction, because Dr. Nuremberg said specifically, you can tell that she hears something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that also speaks to something else. You and I have discussed over the years, do you think that the surveillance video in the church had audio?
You know, right before you said that, I was actually just fixing to say something. There was a, just in case, you know, any of our listeners don't know this, there was a person, we can't take credit for this. I don't remember her name, but there was a woman, and she posted a video. It was a news segment of the case. You know, it was on the news constantly in the very beginning. I don't remember. I'll have to look it up to see exactly what it is, but we will share it on our Facebook page. But of a woman that posted the video, and she goes, am I crazy, or do I hear sound in this video? So they play a small clip of the perpetrator walking through the church, and the woman is talking at the same time, but it's kind of like, you can hear while she's, you know, talking, and you hear something that matches the footprints or the walking, you know what I mean, of the person walking through the church. And so me and you both agreed, we heard it. We heard the foot squeak as they kind of like, they didn't really stumble, but you know how when you're walking and your foot doesn't move smoothly, it kind of like stops because of the rubber on the bottom of your shoe, and maybe the floor is clean or slick or whatever the situation, and your foot will kind of like, you know, squeak. That's what sound I heard when the person was walking. And then when they opened that door, the half door, and the bottom opened, and they kind of threw their head back like, what the heck? You heard that door click. And so
I agree.
Yeah, the girl shared it, and we were like, holy cow. And so we agreed, and everybody was like, no, I don't think so, or I didn't hear anything or whatever, but I clearly heard it.
Do you remember when somebody said it was just them shuffling papers around? It's like, this isn't 1975. Yeah. There's not. No. I was just like, the people that are sitting behind the desk aren't shuffling paper around. It looked like they're reading teleprompters.
Yeah, they're reading.
Reading, that was so funny.
Yeah, they're reading. That's great. It's clear.
We're clear
now. We're definitely going to have to share that with y'all. If y'all haven't seen this piece, we're going to share it on our Facebook page, because it's very interesting. And it's like, it makes you think that there, like you said, that there is, you know, audio, and they just, you know, took that part out.
Right. And if I remember correctly, that was actually Gail King, who was the person talking about it in the news, in that little news segment.
Okay, yes.
But yeah, they cut to it, and it makes me wonder, because here's the deal. Remember, we did research, and we found that even the cheap surveillance video cameras on Amazon had audio.
Yes, that's right.
So it would not be Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be shocking at all if there was some audio on there. Dr. Nuremberg didn't mention audio. Of course, the police have not. But I just have to wonder if there is audio, because like you said, you and I could have sworn we heard it. It just sounded like the right sound effects.
I can't imagine that they would add that in. I really can't imagine that they would do that just for effects or for reaction or whatever.
Right.
I just can't. I mean, if they would, if they were doing that, it looks like they would have done more, you know? It was
yeah,
a
I agree.
Small piece in there. So I just feel like, I mean, I'm like you. I heard it and it matches perfect. So I don't.
Yeah. That's yeah. I don't know what's up with that. Hopefully, maybe somebody out there knows and can comment on our Facebook page or send us a message through Instagram. We would love to hear from you.
Maybe we'll try, to message somebody from that news channel and see if we can't find out and get an answer.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, we'll try that.
Okay, also in this program, there was another person I really liked, in addition to Stephen Fabian, another journalist they had speaking with, Stacey Newman, and she's actually from Headline News, the producer, and she had a lot of insightful things to say. I'll get back to her in a minute, but another thing they said on this broadcast was that the perpetrator entered through a back door. And I remember we later were able to confirm that the perpetrator entered through the kitchen, which is kind of interesting. You know, it makes me think, I know we've said this before, they mentioned it in this Headline News show. It seems to me that the perpetrator had some familiarity with the church, if I had to guess. Maybe not necessarily an expert on the building, but I feel like they had to have some familiarity. How did they, or was it just they thought that door looked good because it was on the opposite side, they wouldn't be seen, you know, from the road, but, or by Missy or anyone that pulled up, you know, would not see the broken in door. But it just seems kind of strange to me that they broke into a kitchen, but I guess that's just the door that had the right amount of glass where they could break it and stick their hand in and open it. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that? Why do you think they chose that particular door? And was it a kitchen? Does that mean anything? Do you think that's just a coincidence, or did it have some kind of meaning?
You know, I honestly think that they would pick that side because it's going to be the way the church is sitting. And eventually I'm going to be able to post this. I know I've talked about it before, but the way the church is sitting, because I get to see this church all the time. I pass this church at least 3 times a week, if not more. Okay. So The way it sits, you're traveling. It doesn't matter whether you're going east or west. The way 287 goes back and forth, east and west. So if I'm coming from Red Oak, Waxahachie area, and I'm traveling west on 287 headed towards Midlothian, the church is going to be on the right-hand side. The closest part of that church that is closest to the road is going to be the awning. That southeast corner is going to be closest to the road. So that makes the northwest corner the farthest from the road and the most hidden, and that's where both of those areas are. One's going to be on the side, which would be the west side, and the other one's going to be on the northwest corner, not quite to the corner,
yes,
but almost. And so both of those are going to be the farthest from the road and the most hidden, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so that makes sense. It probably means nothing that it was the kitchen door.
Yeah,
what
I
it
think
meant
it's just
was
a coincidence.
The least likely.
Yeah, because
right,
they were hidden.
It's just the least likely to be detected, right?
Yes, that's what I think, because there's plenty more doors to go to. There's even one on the that's similar to the one on the very back. There's one very similar to it on the other corner, and they didn't pick that one. And then there's one on the front. Well, of course they're not going to pick that one because they don't want her to know when she gets there. So that, I think they picked the ones farthest from being seen. That's just,
yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah, that makes sense. Cause, and also it had some glass on it, which made breaking in possible.
But you know what? The kitchen is on that side though. Cause I'm looking at the church floor plan and the kitchen is on that west side of the church. And they said that they broke in on that back corner and on the side when they were pointing, when they were showing us on the church on that video. So, and that kitchen area is right there. So I guess that's still basically true.
Yeah, that's interesting. And let's see who else was on this program. There was a couple of experts that gave their opinions, like all shows have. And my favorite was a guy named John Bueller. They didn't say any of these people's names, so I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing any of them correctly. But John is J-O-N without an H, B-U-E-H-L-E-R. And he is a retired investigator himself. And I've seen him on other shows. He does commentary for things now that he's retired. And he was saying that he felt like the perpetrator had knowledge of the building and knowledge of the cameras. And he also made an interesting point. I know we did a lot of talking about the gear, and I think I brought this guy up at that time. But he was saying that in his experience, the perpetrator appears to have on vintage SWAT gear, which he mentioned, Mr. Bueller mentioned that that is readily available online, but also got my wheels turning that this could be someone who was in law enforcement in the past or had someone close to him or her that was in law enforcement, you know, at a previous date, not necessarily current, if it is indeed vintage SWAT gear. And this guy seemed to know what he's talking about. And then there was another expert, William Moroney. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. M-O-R-R-O-N-E. He's a medical examiner and a forensic pathologist. He was not the medical examiner on the scene for Missy. He was simply someone that they hired for the show to give his opinion. He made some really good points about the emotional aspect of the murder. How he said taking an instrument that close up to someone, you know, being one-on-one to someone versus shooting them from a distance. Mm-hmm. He said the fact that this perpetrator was one-on-one close to Missy and holding a hammer and pulling it back and bringing it down is, he characterized that as emotional punishment, which I thought was interesting because there's been so much debate about, was this a hired hit? Was this someone that hated Missy? I tend to lean toward what this guy was talking about. Whether or not it would make sense to a normal person, I believe this person believed he needed to emotionally punish Missy for some reason that we don't know. There's been lots of speculation on why. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. I'm editorializing a little bit there, but one thing I disagreed with him on, and you may remember this from when you watched it, he thinks it's a woman, and John Bueller thinks it's a man. So I thought it was really cool in the show. They did give you opposing viewpoints.
I did hear that. Okay, so one says he thinks that it's a man. He said, I think the brutality of the crime speaks male to me. And then the other one said that they believe that there's a part of the video where the person is coming towards, you know, towards the camera, and they stop and they fidget with the door and they get out some tools and they ever so gently, and I say this every time I say it, that's the only way I can describe it. Ever so gently, they start trying to kind of tap on it like they're going to break in, and I guess they're just, I don't know, passing time. And then they turn around, they put the tools back in their pocket or wherever they're putting them, and they turn around and it kind of looks like, you can't see, but it kind of looks like they're tightening their helmet, or I don't really know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Okay. I so do. They're doing that, and they have this kind of stance. And I think that's where people are, you know, so confused, because that who you're talking about, he says, that's a feminine stance. And I agree. That looks like a feminist stance.
It is.
I would never see any guy stand like that, you know? So I agree.
Yeah,
it's so confusing.
That I do agree that there are like one or two parts of the video that look really female.
Yeah.
Or could be female. But honestly, overall, to me, it looks male. And I agree with the investigator, the retired investigator who spoke to the brutality. We can get into that later. But I just think that, yes, standing like that, I have known men that stand that way. There are some men, and there's some women who are the opposite. There's some men who will overall walk in a masculine way and everything, but they'll have some certain effeminate movements or an effeminate way they stand. And I think that's what we're seeing here, but of course I could be wrong. What do I know? But that's just sort of my take on it. But I see what you're saying, and I agree. So anyway, that was, who knows if it's a male or a female. We have not had that confirmed yet, but that was interesting points that they both made. And let's see, you know, who else made an appearance on here was someone you and I both really liked from Crime Online. And it, for our listeners that don't know about Crime Online, that is Nancy Grace's online program, and she has a podcast. And Alan Duke, you remember him, who was her co-host when that was when Missy was when she was talking about, when Nancy Grace was talking about Missy Beavers, she had Alan Duke doing some work for her and reporting back, and he was really good and really thorough. And he did a couple of podcasts. I believe it was early 2018, for anyone who wants to look those podcasts up, that they did on Missy Beavers. And he had come back and talked about somebody who was former law enforcement. And remember the rumor mill, there was a couple that had moved back to Ohio, and people just thought, oh, they're talking about that guy who used to be a cop. Well, we later learned about the December 2016 search warrant. And in retrospect, looking back at that podcast, I believe that's who they were talking about.
I remember that. I remember everybody was going crazy about that. And then we finally figured that out. I know exactly what you're mm-hmm. talking about.
Yes. So that particular person of interest, I guess you would call it, who they were probably referring to, we don't know for sure, but probably, actually got brought up in this headline news show toward the end. But before I get to that part, they also had in this headline news show an update on the height range. You know, they had been saying forever 5'2 to 5'7. I think that was their third height that they had released.
I think
and they stuck with that. MPD, Midlothian Police, sort of stuck with that 5'2 to 5'7 range for quite a long time. And then, I don't recall where else they released it, but I became mostly aware of the new height range from this headline news program. And the new height range is 5'8 plus or minus 1.5 inches, 1.53 inches plus or minus.
And that's exact. Interesting to me about the 1.53, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm. That why 1.53? Why the three, you know?
Yeah, it's an exact plus or minus 1.53 inches. Okay, where did you get that from? That's just really strange.
I know. Well, and plus, this brings a whole new, I mean, this is a totally different height range than 5'2 to 5'7. I mean, that's not even close to 5'2. Now we've got the height range going up to almost 5'10. And 5'2, I mean, that's ridiculous. And what else used to bother me about the 5'2 to 5'7 range, and I know you've heard me complain about this forever, is that's a 5-inch range. That is a really, I mean, I think that even an amateur, someone who doesn't have any experience in law enforcement or video analysis or height analysis, just your average person could probably find a point in the video where the perpetrator is the closest to one of the doorways and compare that and then walk into the church with some kind of a really basic ruler and measure it and get closer than a 5-inch range.
I so agree that it's just unbelievable. It really is.
Yeah. So I have to believe that MPD is pulling our leg a little bit with these height ranges simply because that should have been a super easy thing for all of those experts to have been able to come up with a much closer range than this plus or minus 1.5 inches makes a lot more sense to me than the 5-inch range.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's just another part of the mystery. But, you know, MPD did tell us many, many times that they will be withholding information in this investigation. And I suspect that the height range is one of those things, if I had to guess, based on just what we've seen and how many times they've changed it, in addition to it having a wide range of 5 inches.
Yeah.
Well, they did get around to, at the end, talking about a man named Bobby Wayne Henry, which I thought was really interesting. This is the first time we have seen a TV show dive into this person. We found out about him when Tim joined our team a couple years ago, and he requested search warrants through open records request, and here it was. and he showed it to us. And we had not heard of this guy. He was not on anybody's radar at all. People who are following the case, I mean. Obviously, he was on law enforcement's radar. But, you know, they did a search warrant. The probable cause for the search warrant that was in the affidavit was stuff like he had tactical gear. There had been multiple people, local people that called in tips on him. He was former law enforcement, working security. One of the probable cause pieces was that he had actually requested to work Missy's memorial service, which took place on the Wednesday after she passed that early Monday morning. And it actually took place at Creekside Church. There is video that a member of the media took of him working her security, working security in plain clothes at that service. So we can link that up on our social media as well. But I just wanted to point out it was interesting to see that addressed in a show. We have never seen that addressed in any of the programs that have covered her case.
And not only,
but then again,
not only do they address it, they also give a statement at the end that he personally wrote himself and even like, you know, kind of like signed it at the bottom. So
yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They let him give his side of the story, and he just said, hey, I have been fully cooperative. Nothing they found in the search warrant tied me to this murder. So basically, don't look at me, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that was interesting. Very, very interesting stuff. So
did you know?
So that, just based on.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, based on the public records, there was enough probable cause to have the search warrant and to execute it on his home and on his devices. And this program also touched on something we knew about. They had found some things, some questionable things on his devices. They had taken his laptop. They took his car. They took all kinds of stuff from his house, tactical gear. They also took his devices. They took his laptop and a BlackBerry.
Some tools.
And they found... Yeah, they found some questionable things on his electronic devices. He got arrested for that. And apparently, I don't understand why we don't have any details on this case. It's totally separate, even though they found this stuff as a result of the Missy Beaver search warrant. This stuff was unrelated to that crime. He did get arrested for that. He did give a jailhouse interview, which can be found on YouTube, with Charlotte Huffman. And then apparently, we don't know why, but the charges were dropped or they just didn't pursue it. There's a lot of talk about perhaps it went to a grand jury. I kind of think it didn't, but we just don't have any information on that. But we do know there was an arrest. The arrest records are public records, and we do have that in our possession. But anyway, that whole thing was very confusing. We never really got any closure on what happened to that little case that came – that side case that came as a result of that December 2016 search warrant.
Right.
But I guess that's all I have to say about him right now. Do you have anything to add?
No, I just remember that he was there for 70 plus days. And
yes.
Huffman did an interview with him, like you were saying. There's a copy of the video online. You found it on YouTube, I believe. And he, you know, I remember him saying, I didn't even know that woman. He was shocked when they showed up at his door and basically talked to him. I don't know what they talked to him about, but he was just, in other words, he was shocked about the whole ordeal. And he had never heard of her before she was murdered. So
you know what he reminded me of when he said that was I was working an event. I used to work for Audi Cars, and we had these events nationwide, and I was in Los Angeles working one. I was actually in Santa Monica, and I was working. It was the AFI film something or another event, but they had a sort of a satellite part of the event over in Santa Monica where I was stationed with the cars. And there was these really nice Santa Monica police officers, and they came by and talked to me, and they were super nice. And you know, it was kind of long shifts, and we were all a little bored, so we all kind of got to know each other and chatted here and there. And they were talking about this one cop was telling me the funniest thing is when they would get witness statements. And he said people are always just like, you know, I was just sitting there reading my Bible, and then and then such and such happened.
Right.
It's just hilarious how people make themselves sound so innocent. And it just kind of reminded me of that. Bobby was like, I never even heard of her. I was just reading my Bible and these cops came in. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, he may be completely innocent of Missy's murder. We don't have enough information to know. But one thing is we know for sure he did know who Missy was. I mean, I don't think we can look at that search warrant affidavit and think otherwise, because he did request to work her memorial. So how can you do that and not know who she is and actually walk around at her memorial for that long and not know where you are? I mean, you're at Missy Beaver's memorial and everybody in town knew that she was murdered.
Right.
So I don't know. I found that strange. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I do. I know that from reading and from things that people have put on online, he was a member of a church that would have a security team, and they would do security for other churches that didn't, have a security team. So the church that they had this, what was it that they were having? I forgot.
Memorial service.
Yeah, they were having.
Yes, it was her community. It was her community memorial service at Creekside Church.
Yeah, but it was
on Wednesday early evening.
I thought it was not at Creekside, but it was at a Cowboy Church.
No, her actual funeral that the family flew in for and everything, that was at Creekside Church, but that was the following Saturday. This was a community memorial service, and it was actually at Creekside. That footage that we've watched of Bobby working her funeral actually is at the Creekside Church, the same location as her murder.
Okay. Anyway, that was what I was understanding, was that they often offered their security team for, you know, things such as this. And so he offered to do it. And so that's why he was there. Now, I don't know anything about the part where he didn't know her. I had heard him say that on that interview. So.
Right. And it's possible that there was an error in the search warrant affidavit, but it's been explained to us so many times by people from inside that have law enforcement experience. And an attorney told us too that the search warrant affidavit is a sworn affidavit.
Right.
The information in the document has to be accurate, you know, to the best of their knowledge. So it seems strange to me that they would put anything in there that was untrue, because apparently what happens if you are caught lying on an affidavit, then all of the evidence that you get as a result of that search warrant, it gets thrown out. So it's a disaster, you know, it's just a nightmare. So yeah, I would think that I would think that it's accurate, but you know, anyway, I just thought that was really interesting that he requested, you know, the wording in the search warrant though, I think is a little off. It said that he volunteered, but my understanding from talking to other people that know him, remember, told us that he actually was employed to work. He just had requested to work it. So whatever the case may be, I kind of get hung up on semantics, but whatever the case may be, it just seems like if you're actually, whether or not he even requested is another matter, but if you're actually working someone's memorial service, chances are you're going to remember that person's name.
Yes.
Especially such a high profile case in a small town, you know, it just seemed odd to me. I need to rewatch that Charlotte Huffman piece and make sure that's even what he said. I believe he says that he had never heard of Missy Beavers, but
he said he had never heard of her before something, but I don't know what the something was. I don't know if he said
right
now or before the cop showed up at his door. I don't know. I need to get familiar with that. So.
Right. I agree. So anyway, we know very little about that situation. All we really know is what we have seen in the public record. We've heard some things here and there, but, you know, those aren't really worth sharing because we can't prove any of it. So we basically are going to stick to what's in the public records. And the way it looks is he worked her memorial and he had some tactical gear that ended up not being the same tactical gear that was used in the murder. The search warrant was executed on his residence and on his car's devices in December of 2017. So that's quite a while after the murder. And there's who knows why that is. Like, we can speculate. We've gotten some expert opinions on that. But, you know, it could have been because they didn't have enough. The police, the judge probably kept sending the police back saying you don't have enough probable cause.
Right.
But that brings me back to the forensic diatrist. He was also listed on that same search warrant affidavit, Dr. Michael Nuremberg, as saying that Dr. Michael Nuremberg said, and he reiterated this in the HLN show that we watched tonight. He said that he looked at several perpetrators walk and compared that, of course, to the church video. And what he found was he could eliminate everybody except for Bobby Wayne Henry,
right,
based on the way he walks and moves, his gait analysis. So that was something else that police had added to the search warrant affidavit for probable cause. So there you have it. That's basically how our understanding is how Bobby Wayne Henry got on the radar. There was some people that called him in as a tip. We don't know what they said, but they did. They said multiple people. If you look at that 2016 search warrant affidavit, we also have him being known as being a police officer in the past and having either owning tactical gear or he was a tactical cop. Not clear on that. And then also, you know, public records also show that he has an interesting past, and we'll just leave it at that. But the public records are out there for anyone who wants to pull them. And did you have anything you wanted to add on Bobby Wayne Henry before we moved on?
No, that one is and that was confusing for me. I need to watch. That's the part I didn't get to watch. When you watch it, when you're streaming it, I don't really know how they do this, but you actually have to watch the commercials.
I know. It'll let you skip them. I noticed that.
The first one, it said, you can't fast forward through this part. And I was trying to just watch, you know, obviously just the show part. And it was 176 seconds that I had to watch. I was like, I know. All right. It was crazy.
Don't they realize? Don't they realize we can't sit still that long? But
exactly.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
So yeah, I didn't get to.
That's what I was thinking. How can I get through these commercials? We're so spoiled. Remember back in the old days, we used to have to watch all the commercials.
Yeah,
or you used to know how much time you had. Like, okay, there's a couple of commercials. I can run to the bathroom. I can go get it. I can go get a bottle of water. You know, but now it's you can skip right over it.
Yeah, because the first one was 176 seconds. The second one was 75 or something like that. And I thought, oh my goodness, are they? You know, what's the next one going to be like? So it was. I didn't get to finish it, obviously, but now I'm going to watch that again, and I'll be better prepared with that one because I had a hard time getting my.
Right. Well, I think that show being so interesting and being the first really deep dive that we've seen from the media, which is ridiculous. You would think that there would be multiple shows that were that good on this topic, but we only have that one and it's a really good one. So I think we should probably discuss it again on our next podcast. And by then you will have seen it again and I'll watch it again and we can kind of maybe bring up some other points that we picked up from it because it really is a good show. And I think it deserves some more attention. We can go back over some stuff. And it was really neat seeing Brandon and the girls. I was heartbroken watching Brandon and the girls talk. I mean, they've just been through so much. Oh, and Randy Beavers. And they went over how that whole wacky thing that you already discussed on a past podcast about the dog blood and how that. And you know what? Bless his heart. I think that Randy and Brandon both really thought they were doing the right thing by having that press conference in front of the police station when the news broke. It was like 4 days after Missy's murder when that happened with the dog blood on Brandy Beaver's shirt, right? That they took to the cleaners and the lady who worked at the cleaners went, oh, that's the Beavers. Oh my gosh, there's blood on this shirt. I don't blame her for calling the police at all. That makes perfect sense. But it did end up testing as dog blood. And so anyway, I really think it backfired on them. They were thinking, because I'm in that show, gosh, I hope we're not ruining the show for people who haven't seen it yet. But Brandon says, you know, I told my dad, let's go down there and talk to everybody and get ahead of this before people start thinking that we're in some way associated with the murder. But
I can see that.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I think it just backfired on him because, you know, the biggest part of that, not only did they sound kind of awkward and they both kind of maybe laughed at the wrong places, you know, people watching it who want to think that they're both involved are going to look for things. And I think that there's enough kind of uncomfortable, nervous laughter from both of them that they were thinking, aha, see, they're not sorry, you know, or whatever. And right. Then here's the one part that really got everyone, I think, is when Randy Beavers turned around to walk away, he had sort of the same posture and the same walk appeared to as the perpetrator of the church. So that whole thing totally backfired on them. It just gave everyone more fuel than they would have had if they just would have let it go, in my opinion. So, you know, hindsight being 2020, I'm sure they regretted doing that, but it was too late. You know, everybody was talking about how, oh, it looks like the father-in-law. I mean, that's, I think, right then, I think it was that little presser where he walks away from the camera and they film him from behind walking. I think that's what set a lot of that father-in-law talk into motion, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, we've heard that so many times, and it's like, oh my gosh, I know so many people that are built like that, or stand like that, or walk like that. So, I mean, goodness.
Well, you know, you know, something else that reminds me, you know, you were talking earlier about the part where the perpetrator is standing in front of the Dutch doors and he opens it and he's just kind of like, oh, whoops, you know, he's sort of surprised that the whole door didn't open. Right. He's like, oh, okay, it's a Dutch door. You can see him acknowledging that and he puts his head way up. Well, Brandon, I can't remember the name of it. I should have written it down. But his dad.
Scoliosis or something like that.
Yeah, his dad, Randy, has some sort of an issue that caused him to have a lot of his vertebrae at the top part going toward his neck all fused. So he cannot. He said that the perpetrator, when he's at the Dutch door and he looks up like that, he said, my dad can't even do that. He's lost that whole range of motion that would allow you to move your head like that.
So it's spondylosis. I just looked it up. It's spondylosis. It's a type of arthritis spurred by wear and tear to the spine. It happens when discs and joints degenerate, when bone spurs grow on the vertebrae, or both. These changes can impair the spine's movement and affect the nerves and other functions.
That's interesting. It sounds like it's part of like degenerative disc disease.
Yeah.
Which is fairly common, especially in older people. That's interesting. Thanks for looking that up.
Yeah, he said that the jerk motion that the perp makes whenever the Dutch doors, you know, the bottom opens and not the top, he's kind of like, oh, what is this, you know? So he kind of, you know, you jerk your head back like, oh my gosh, are you serious? He kind of makes that jerk motion. Brandon made a comment, and I don't remember where this was at, that my dad couldn't even do that. He wouldn't even be able to jerk his head back like that.
It was actually in this program. The Headline News Show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Where he said you'll get to that part. Yeah, that's exactly where it came from. And then I'm trying to think if there's anything else from the Headline News Show that I want to cover now. I guess we'll just save the rest of that for our next podcast.
I do want to cover one thing, and I didn't get to see it, but I do remember it from the first couple of times I watched it, because I didn't expect to see it on there, and I just wanted to get, you know, your thoughts, and we can just kind of discuss it for a minute. There is a blood stain pattern analyst talks on the show about blood spatter, and she goes into explain that the direction and the way the blood is patterned on, you know, the floor or wherever, they can tell a lot from it. And so I found that real interesting that she talked about that. And I mean, I can't really say that I understand it completely. I do a little bit, but I don't. You know what I'm saying? Because yeah, they already know what happened. So I'm trying to figure out how that plays into it. So I found that interesting that they talked about that. I feel like that has some significance in this crime, crime and solving it. I'm hoping that they know something.
I remember you saying that a long time ago, and I agree with you. In fact, I really made a point to listen hard and watch that tonight, because I remembered your comments were like, why did they even have a bladder expert on there? She explained everything really well, and she explained different things, but then they didn't relate it back to this case.
Yeah, and that was kind of frustrating because I wanted to know exactly, like you said, if you were, I know there was a case, and I won't spend time on it, but there was a case of a man, and his, I'm trying to remember his name. It was similar to, oh my goodness, Lacey and Peterson.
Yeah.
Okay, it was, the last name was Peterson. It wasn't them. It was a different case. And it was a husband and wife. And he claimed that he was outside at the pool and he came in the house and couldn't find his wife. And at the bottom of the stairs, she was just laying there.
And oh, Michael Peterson.
Yes, Michael Peterson. And so they couldn't, you know, he said he didn't know. He just came in there and she was just there. He just assumed she fell, blah, blah, blah. Well, then a blood expert come in and said, well, actually, you can tell that someone hit her in the head. She didn't just fall and hit her head and fall down the stairs and just die. Somebody hit her in the head because of the way that whenever they hit her in the head, when they brought their hand back up over their shoulder, the blood went up and over. And that makes perfect sense. So I thought, oh, okay, that makes sense. But I don't know how it pertains to this case, like you said. So
yeah,
I wish we understood more on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I even looked out for it because I remember you made that really good point a long time ago when we first saw the show. And I didn't see any relationship. It just looks like they were describing blood spatter. But then they didn't say, we have this blood spatter from the murder. And here's why, you know, I don't know why they brought it up if they weren't allowed to discuss it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was interesting.
Really weird.
When you start watching it, you're like, oh my goodness. And then nothing happens with it. You're like, okay, so
right,
what,
right.
Where are we going with this? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I hate that part. I know. It makes you want to go, can y'all do a, you know, a part two to season one, episode four?
I tell you we need more
information.
This was by far the best show I've seen on this, or maybe even the only, I should say the only show, right? We've only seen like news blurbs. We've never actually seen a show dedicated to her case that I can recall. Mm-hmm. We haven't,
no,
right?
No, we haven't.
Okay, so it was just really nice to see a little bit of a deep dive into this and to talk about search warrants. Because you know that one, that search warrant, we call it the December 2016 search warrant. It's actually the subject of the search warrant is the man that they brought up on this program, Bobby Wayne Henry. You know, it's interesting when this case first hit, remember in the first few weeks, MPD would publicize their search warrants. They would literally give them to the media because the media would say, well, Midlothian police just gave us the search warrant, da da da, and then they would cover it. And then some months passed and then, you know, the only reason we knew about this search warrant is because Tim Koval had ordered them through the open records request and shared it with us. Otherwise, we would have never known about it potentially until we saw this headline news program.
I think that's actually how me and you started talking, remember?
It is. Yeah, we both started talking to Tim publicly and then we private messaged each other. Then the three of us started talking and that's how it all started a few years ago. Exactly. But anyway, long story short, it's all very confusing, and MPD has actually done a really good job of keeping most of the information private. I think that, oh, and something else in this program, Renee, they discussed how Midlothian police was not, when they arrived, they realized that they were not equipped to process the crime scene themselves, so they had to call in Ellis County, and that's why we see the CSI report is actually coming from Ellis County, not from Midlothian police. And I think Brandon Beaver misspoke in this show because he made the comment that they had to call a neighboring city to process the crime scene, but it actually was Ellis County because we've seen the document. And that was actually Joe Fitzgerald, I believe, was the person that did that processed, you know, Missy's truck and did the report about the scene that morning. So.
Yeah. I don't know why they say that. It's, I don't know. I guess it goes along with everything else. You know, you get one story and then you get another. So,
yeah. So I just thought that was interesting that, you know, they did have, Ellis County process the scene, but you probably remember this too, from toward the end of that document, Sergeant Fitzgerald, I hope I got his rank correct, but Fitzgerald says at the end that this is the extent of my involvement in this case. So he was making it clear that they were just there to process the scene, not to lead the investigation or to really participate, it sounded like.
Right. That makes sense, though, that he would say that it's just for that one purpose.
Right.
Because they just don't have the ability to do those, you know, those things.
Yeah, and being and why would they purchase all that equipment or whatever it is you need to process a murder scene if you have one murder every, you know, 10, 20 years, you know? It's a small town. It's a safe place, thank goodness. And that's just the way to. But here, can I just bring up one other thing? I think we're probably about to wrap up. We're at almost an hour, but I thought this was interesting. I had heard from somebody close to the case who recently said that MPD doesn't owe the public anything. And I think you and I discussed this on the phone, but, you know, I really think that they do for a couple of different reasons. And I'll say why. I think they're doing a great job. I am not one of these people that thinks that, and I know you aren't either, that thinks that they're hiding anything to be sinister. I think they're hiding things for the good of the case.
Exactly.
But I do think that they owe the public an update about the Nissan Altima because they did ask the public to look for that vehicle. So I wish that they would circle back with, you know, some kind of a press conference or even a press release and in writing, you know, just say, never mind, we found the driver or something of that nature. Or we decided it's not important, or we are still looking for the Altima. Please keep your eye out for it. You know, I just kind of feel like that kind of update would be nice.
Yeah, it would. And let's don't forget the last time that we heard from them, which was, I'm pretty sure, last April 2019, they mentioned we're still looking for a 2010 to 2012 Nissan Altima, light colored or white in color, or a 2010 to 2012, was it Lex? What was the car?
It was an Infiniti, which is made by the same company that makes Nissan. Yeah, good point. I remember that now.
And the thing is I've looked at all the vehicles, 2010, 11, and 12, and they look nothing like the vehicle in the video.
I know. I would love to know. I wish that we had some enterprising journalists around here would ask, why
Add that car. Because if you knew nothing about cars, and I'm no car expert, but I you know, obviously I can see that a taillight looks different or a headlight looks different or, you know, whatever it may be on the vehicle, you know, a bumper or a, you know, grill on the front of the car, that car looks nothing. When I say it looks nothing like it, oh yeah, from a distance, you might be like, oh, is that a, you know, Infiniti? Oh no, that's a Nissan Altima. But looking at, even with the cameras and the video that we seen, I can still tell you that is not an Infiniti. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I remember you and I both going, what? I mean, you brought it to my attention. I just thought, why would they add a car that like 3 years after the murder?
And I think they didn't even say it. They just put it in a one of their updates or whatever. Remember? Mm-hmm. It was just something they put out for the public, just kind of, you know, a statement or, you know, blah, 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 you know, be sure and let us know. We don't really need your opinions. We need actual tips, which I totally agree with that. I'm sure they had so many opinions that they were about to lose their mind, you know, oh, I bet it's my neighbor, or I bet it's that guy that used to walk down here on the corner of XYZ. And, you know, I know that they were tired of that, but
or you know what, I think people were also calling. I heard that people were calling in and saying, you really need to look at the father-in-law.
Yeah,
it's like, you don't think that they're looking at the family first? I mean, of course they're looking at the father-in-law.
On every case like this, every single case, that's the first way they start. They start with the person closest to the victim, and then they work their way out.
Yep.
And it could be the closest person, it could be the, you know, the whoever's closest, and it could be the neighbor, it could be the person that they work with, it could be their best friend, it could be their spouse, their child, their brother, you know, just depends. Their closest person may not be the same person to every, you know, every crime. But anyway, I it was just frustrating. I just, when I seen that, I thought, are you kidding me? They just changed the car. So I, of course, I immediately start checking it out. And I'm like, no, that's not that car. It's not, the tail lights don't look the same. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. Y'all have to check it out. Our listeners will just have to look for yourselves, but definitely not anyway.
Yeah. So that's something I don't understand, is why they would add a completely different car model, you know, with different shaped lights, like you said, that long after the fact. And I just really wish that they would update us. And so that was one of the two things I was saying, that I really think that, you know, police do owe the public something. I'm not sure I agree that they owe us nothing. They don't owe us everything, because that would ruin the case. But I think they owe us a little update on the Nissan Altima, because they did ask the public to help. And then the second thing, I think that just as a public safety matter, because I know I was telling you the other day, I have a friend that lives in Midlothian, and she said that she and her mother, they don't live in the same house. They each have different houses in Midlothian, but they each don't feel safe just even going in the driveway at night to grab their trash cans to bring them back up after the trash comes. I mean, just sort of little things that you run outside to do, they're still really uneasy around there, because as far as they know, a homicidal maniac is still on the loose. And I kind of wish that MPD would say, listen, everybody, be careful, keep your doors locked. Or they would say, look, this was targeted. This is definitely not a public safety issue. Because, you know, police will do that sometimes if they know who did something and they know the reason, the quote unquote reason why someone killed someone. They will say, look, this is
isolated.
It's isolated. Thank you. It's not a random thing. You do not have to worry.
Right.
So those are kind of the two reasons why I do think that we should be getting some kind of an update from them. It just, you know, more of a safety thing than anything.
Yeah. And I will say again, like I said before, I just hope and pray that updates this year. Obviously I hope and pray that the murder is solved first and foremost, but with the updates from everyone, I hope that they're better than the normal rundown of, you know, this is what happened. We still don't know who it is, you know, next.
Yeah,
you know,
that's getting really old.
It is really getting old. It's like, I don't even want to see it if it's not going to, you know, if they're not going to give us any more information or let us know that they're still working the case. Let us know that they don't have anything to go on. I mean, at least tell us something.
Yeah, I agree. Oh,
I think everybody does.
And before we completely walk away from the whole Bobby Wayne Henry subject and the headline news show, in his statement, he said, I passed a polygraph. And I thought that was interesting, because police never even told us about him, much less that he passed a polygraph. I was just wondering.
I had forgotten about that.
I wonder if he really did take a polygraph, or if, I mean, would they allow, I mean, because the media, they don't know if someone's telling the truth or not. I mean, did he really take one? And how would we ever be able to confirm that? I'm just curious, you know, inquiring minds.
I mean, hopefully they wouldn't have let, I mean, I'm hoping that they wouldn't have let him say that on, or even repeat that he said that on a show that they didn't verify that. So hopefully that was verified.
Yeah, I don't think that they really would verify that. I don't know. I really don't know. That's a good question.
That'll be our other question that we ask whenever we send them our question for them.
right. And, you know, because if you really think about it, this show, MPD was not involved in the show. They weren't quoted. Now, they did show old stock video of old press conferences and stuff like that. And they showed Kevin Johnson speaking. And I believe at the point that this show was released, he was already retired. So he wasn't even there anymore. He retired to become a pilot, I believe, is what the article said that we read about him leaving Midlothian police, that he told the public it was because he had his pilot license and wanted to pursue that. But yeah, I mean, Midlothian police didn't really seem to have much of a hand in this headline news program. So they really weren't there to confirm or deny any statements made by anyone.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely the truth. I'm definitely going to go back and watch it again so I can see the pieces that I missed. Like I said, I had trouble getting it to play on my TV because it's a smart TV, and obviously it's smarter than me because I could figure it out. Trying to get it to play, and it was, you know, normally when I try to cast something, I have no problem. I just put it on Wi-Fi and hit the button and, you know, tell it where to go. but there was no option. So anyway,
you know,
so
what?
I'll get that figured out.
Yeah, I know. So, everything's so complicated these days, but we ended up running everything through our Roku system, which I'm so glad we did, because instead of having the cable boxes and all that stuff that we used to have, now we just have, we have our cable TV runs through our Roku, so we don't have to have a separate remote control for that. And we also use that same remote for our Roku remote for Hulu, Amazon Prime, and Netflix or YouTube or whatever we want to watch. It's really cool. So I'm happy that my husband set it up that way, because we just have, now we just have the one remote. And also with Roku, you can, you get their app on your phone and you can use the app. It has a remote control, so you can use your phone. You can use your smartphone as a remote control too, in case you misplace or the other one breaks or something. It's pretty cool.
You know, I just learned that the other day. I say the other day, it's probably been a couple months ago, but we had our cable company come out because something wasn't working. I don't know. And so I asked the guy, I said, you know, it just, the bill just keeps getting bigger and bigger every time I turn around. I said, is there anything that I can do to cut down the bill? Cause it started out at like 160 and now it's up to like 220.
Wow.
But anyway, I won't go through that boring story, but anyway, he said what you said. He said, well, you can turn your boxes in and use your phone. And I'm like, what? Nobody ever told me that. Like, I mean, I guess it's not, you know, that something that they want to do to make everybody save money. But anyway, I mean, I don't know how some people know and some people don't, is my point. So,
yeah, I don't remember how we figured it out, but we went through a long phase years ago where we only used our phones as remotes. I don't remember why, but then we got a new Roku and I guess we probably had lost or destroyed the remotes. My kids were little back then, but yeah, I haven't used it as my phone as a remote in a long time, but I did it a couple weeks ago because I couldn't find where everybody had laid the Roku remotes down. So I was like, I wonder if this still works. And I was surprised to see that my app, you know, had been so long since I used it as a remote. Anyway, Roku is not a sponsor of our show. I just wanted to talk about Roku. I just love my Roku. So anyway,
we will work on that in another one. I will definitely, we have a Roku that we bought a couple years ago. It was on special at Christmas and we still haven't opened it. So apparently that's something we need to do. So we'll get with the program.
Yeah, I was going to say you might like it. We love ours. So we've had a few now.
I'll definitely do that. And just for our listeners, just make sure that everybody keeps it in mind that Crime Stoppers of Ellis County will pay for information leading to the arrest and charging of any felony suspect or suspects. All callers will remain anonymous. You can call in any felony crime you have information about. It does not have to be an advertised crime. The number is 972-937-PAYS. That's 972-937-7297. And then let's let everybody know again where all we are listed for our podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, Renee. That's awesome information. Right. Did we cover everything we wanted to cover this time, I guess?
Yeah, just let everybody know where we have our podcast up and going now, because we've got it on some more.
I was going to say that this time. Whoops, let me get organized. Hang on. I forgot I said I was going to do that. Oh, and I can't pull it up now because I'm on the app. Because we're recording. Whoopsies. Okay, I did screenshot it, so hang on just a second. I forgot all about that. Did you know that you and I take screenshots and send them to each other pretty much nonstop every day?
Well, that's our reminder. It's kind of like our filing system or our note. I can take notes.
I found it.
It's an easy way to take notes.
right. I was just going to say that, oh, wait, that's not it. I was looking at the breakdown of everybody who listened to our podcast. And for example, episode 2 had the widest range. We had people listen on Anchor app. We had people listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.
I didn't even know Google had a podcast.
I didn't either. And until I saw that, that's exactly right. I'm still looking for the screenshot I took of where all were available.
While you're looking for that, I will, because I looked up some of the different streaming devices that can be used to watch that HLN show.
Yeah.
And so I found a few more. There's Amazon, DirecTV, Xfinity, Sling TV, and Fubo TV, which I've never even heard of. So,
oh, awesome.
There you go.
Yeah,
So if anybody wants to watch that HLN show, that's a few more that you can search and find it, and just look it up under Lies, Crime, and Video. It'll be Murder in the Church is the episode.
Yeah, and you know, Tim was saying that he watched it on his DirecTV. And you and I have Spectrum, so we were able to get HLN stream on demand through there, through Spectrum.
Right.
But that's what we're looking for, is HLN on demand. I'm afraid I'm going to have to fold and do this next time. I cannot find.
That's okay. Okay. We'll just listen.
Tim did say that, I'm looking at the email he sent us the other day. He sent it on Saturday. If you have DirecTV, the show is on HLN on demand, channel 1204. And of course, it's in the Lies, Crime, and Video series. It's episode 4 called Murder in the Church. But yeah, I'm going to have to share that information about all the podcast platforms we're on the next one, because I can't look at the app right now because we haven't engaged with the recording. So,
yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Well, I think we had a good episode, and I think we will we'll probably do it again next week.
Sounds good.
And we thank all of our listeners for listening to our podcast. If you have anything specific y'all want to talk about, please send us a message on our Facebook page or Instagram page. And we look forward to talking to y'all next time.
Thank you for tuning in to True Crime Broads, and we'll see you soon.
Have a good night.
You know something?